Many aesthetic patients want it all. While lasers can't do it all, they certainly can do a lot depending on the cutaneous application one has in mind. Is the lesion vascular, pigmented, a tattoo, for hair removal, non-ablative or ablative resurfacing, leg veins, scars? Thankfully, Dr. Tina Alster and Dr. Jane Yu provide us with an update on the rapid advances occurring with regard to laser applications for dermatology.
This is Dr. Jane Yu with Dialogues in Dermatology, and I have the wonderful pleasure of interviewing Dr. Tina Alster for updates in lasers. Dr. Tina Alster is the founding director of the Washington Institute of Dermatologic Laser Surgery and is a clinical professor of dermatology at Georgetown University Medical Center in Washington, D.C. Welcome, Dr. Alster.
Well, thank you, Jane.
So, Dr. Alster, tell me, how has the field evolved over the past decade?
Well, the field has evolved in several ways. Let me just point out two things in particular. Over the last decade, the introduction of fractionated lasers have come into play. And what I mean by that are the lasers that not only emit at a continuous wavelength or even pulsed delivery system, but we're fractionating the delivery so that little pixels or little areas of wounding occur so that we can resurface skin where you can improve scars, wrinkles, aging skin, etc. And what's nice about these fractionated delivery systems is the fact that they're less painful, there's a lower recovery rate, fewer side effects, and we get really nice clinical outcomes. So that's one of the main things. The other thing that has changed over the past decade is that we're mixing and matching different laser systems, meaning that you can do more than one laser treatment in the same day. So in the past, where we would maybe use a Q-switch laser to treat a tattoo, followed by a couple weeks later or a month later with a pulse laser for a scar in the same area, you can deliver both those systems at the same time. And I've been known to use upwards of four and even five lasers in the same treatment session in the same skin area. So we are learning a lot of how these systems work not only singly, but together in order to optimize clinical effect.
Wow, so it seems like there's, you know, a lot of different uses that come into play, and there's a wide variety of lasers that now we have in our armamentarium. What are some misconceptions, however, that lasers can and cannot do?
Well, I think that there is a general misconception that you can just get one laser that will treat everything. And that's not only true with the patients that come in thinking, oh, just you can zap everything with a single laser, but that's true of many practitioners who contact me on a daily basis saying, well, what one laser would you recommend for a whole multitude of things? And unfortunately, there isn't one laser that can treat everything. You will need to have at least two lasers in order to treat the majority of things. And certainly, I wouldn't have 20 lasers hanging around my facility if I only needed two. So I think the big misconception is that you can just use one laser. And another big misconception is that you can just do one treatment and all of the scar will be removed or the entire telangiectasia will be resolved. Patients often are told that, oh, we can just zap that and it will go away. But what they aren't prepared for is the fact that there are usually at least two or three treatments, if not more, are needed to visibly reduce the signs of a scar or a tattoo or even rosacea. So multiple treatments and usually multiple different lasers.
So what are some of your workhorse or go-to lasers that you feel that you can't live without?
Well, there are two in particular that I use on a daily basis multiple times. And the first one is my pulsed dye laser, which was the first laser I ever had in my practice. I started the Washington Institute of Dermatologic Laser Surgery in 1990. And even though it was an institute, I only had one laser, and that was my pulsed dye laser. That pulsed dye laser has had numerous upgrades over the last two decades, such that the wavelength has changed a little bit. Now we can dial in up or down the pulse duration, and there are different spot sizes. So it's a lot more flexible. But I use that pulse dye laser to improve hypertrophic scars, a variety of vascular lesions from port wine stains and hemangiomas to telangiectasias to erythematous or early stria and a whole host of other dermal lesions that have been published through the years. Inflammatory linear verrucous epidermal nevi, for instance. Anything basically that contains red outside of red tattoos. If it involves a vascular component, then you can use a pulse dye laser. laser on it. The other laser that I use every day multiple times is my non-ablative fractionated laser. This one is a Fraxel Dual, but there are many other types of fractionated lasers out there. But the non-ablative aspect of it is very nice because the recovery from that laser is very quick, usually only a couple days of redness, followed by 2 to 3 days where people feel a little bit sandpapery in their skin texture. And this is used to improve skin surface texture, improve wrinkles, atrophic scarring, and a number of other kind of irregularities in the skin contour. So I often will use these lasers either singly or together, and as I said, multiple times daily.
Okay, so it seems like the pulse dye and the fractionated are your two workhorse lasers to go to. Now, sometimes patients come in to see you for facial rejuvenation and they want laser treatment. What different options are available and can they be used in conjunction with other procedures?
Well, you bring up a very good point. Because I have a laser center, most people think that if they come in, that's all I'm going to offer. But certainly there are things that people come in with where it's not just lasers that can improve the condition, but a multitude of other injectables, whether they're fillers or neurotoxins. And so I often will tell people about the whole variety of things. If somebody comes in, for instance, with dispigmentation and fine rigidities, obviously that's something I would tell them would do best with a non-ablative fractionated laser device. However, if somebody has a lot of atrophy and early laxity along the jawline, I will talk to them about fillers, usually the hyaluronic acid fillers, which we can perform in the same treatment session. If somebody has movement-associated rigidities, I would talk to them about neurotoxin injections at the same time. Another device that I'm using a lot more these days that I will perform simultaneously with the three that I just mentioned is something called high-intensity focused ultrasound, the Ulthera device, and that's really good for tightening and lifting the skin in a non-invasive manner. So absolutely, you can use all these things either singly or together to optimize the effect.
You've performed a tremendous amount of work on facial scarring and written so much on this topic. What can you tell us about the most effective modalities that we currently have in our armamentarium in terms of scar revision techniques?
Well, the first order of business when treating scars is to properly categorize the scar. There are erythematous scars, there are hypertrophic scars, there are keloid scars, and there are pigmented scars. And there's another category called early or pre-scars. Those are scars that may be in the making after an injury or surgery. I actually think they're the same, quite frankly, as erythematous scars, but we don't want to get into semantics there. Certainly, any of those scars that contain vascular elements, like hypertrophic scars, keloid scars, erythematous scars, and the pre-scars, basically all of them except maybe the pigmented scars, would do very well with pulse dye laser irradiation. I and others have written about this numerous times over the last 2 decades and have garnered really good clinical results, usually about 50 to 80% after 2 or 3 consecutive pulse dye laser treatments delivered at 6 to 8 week intervals. Now, how about the atrophic scars? Atrophic scars and even some of the hyperpigmented scars might do very nicely with one of the fractionated laser devices, whether that's the non-ablative device or an ablative device. Either of those devices would do very, very nicely in recontouring those atrophic scars. And last but not least, those scars that are also impregnated maybe with asphalt or carbon particles from, say, a fall, a road rash, an accident. And these days, because of all the wars going on globally, we see a lot of bomb injuries. And so those types of scars that have impregnated carbon-based material, we can use one of the Q-switched pigment-specific lasers or even the newer Pico second lasers to eradicate those elements within the scar. So again, a pulse dye laser to the rescue, as well as either an ablative or non-ablative laser device.
We're seeing that males have increasingly willing to embrace their aesthetic side, so it's not only females that are coming in to see us for cosmetic treatments, but we also have the women who bring in their husbands or males who just come off the street. You have astutely picked up on this and integrated the masculine aesthetic into your practice. Which laser and cosmetic treatments do you find that men tend to gravitate towards?
Well, this is a real growing field, and it's not growing as quickly as I would have imagined it would, given the number of males out there who really need to have some of these services. We actually started the Washington Institute for Men, which is a side business from my Washington Institute of Dermatologic Laser Surgery in Washington. They're a little slow in coming in, at least the aging baby boomers who probably need it more than others. The younger guys tend to embrace it more. The ones in their 20s and 30s, they don't really blink twice about coming in for cosmetic treatments, and they tend to like the injectables. the quick fixes. So whether it's the hyaluronic acid fillers for the nasolabial folds, whether it's getting a neurotoxin injection for their crow's feet or glabella lines, they really like that. The older guys that are coming in typically have many other problems. They may have a number of keratoses. A lot of them have a fair amount of actinic damage. We do a lot of photodynamic therapy on those individuals. And I think a particular concern for men of all ages, but certainly as they get older, in addition to having some of the photo-damaged skin issues that we have across the board, are body contouring issues. So we have a lot of non-invasive body contouring options, like the cool sculpting, which is a slow cooling of the skin and freezing the fat, basically, in a non-invasive manner. And also hair, whether it's hair overgrowth or not enough hair. So replacing hair or removing unwanted hair in places where they don't want the hair. So those are the main pillars of activity when we're talking about men.
So it seems as though we have a lot at our disposal for men as well as women. Now, you briefly touched upon this, but how do we temper patients' expectations with reality? For instance, that tattoo will not disappear with just one or two treatments.
Yeah, this is unfortunate because so many people now have tattoos. Upwards of 50% of population in their 20s have sport at least one tattoo. And across all age groups, I think about 30% sport at least one tattoo. So, you know, they're quite ubiquitous. For the most part, they're accepted, at least socially, much more now than they used to be. But there are a certain number of them that regret having had the tattoo. And they come in and they think that getting one tattoo laser treatment should remove their tattoo because it only took them one treatment to get the tattoo on. And so there's quite a bit of education that goes into play here in terms of warning them that it typically takes several treatments. Now the Q-switch lasers that have been around for the better part of 20 years typically require about 10, I would say, treatments in order to get rid of 80% of a professional tattoo. Certainly to get rid of the last 20% may require another 10 treatments. In the last couple of years, there have been these newer picosecond lasers, very briefly pulsed systems that blast the tattoo ink much more quickly and effectively, such that in lieu of, say, 10 or 12 laser treatments in order to rid somebody of 80% of that tattoo, it may only take 2 or 3 sessions. It's quite magical. Unfortunately, and as what you might expect, these picosecond lasers are much more expensive. In fact, it was such an expense that I dragged my feet getting one for a while, and I finally do have one and see that it's very impressive in the way in which it performs. But there are not many centers that have one of these yet.
Sometimes patients will see other providers who are non-derms or perhaps a PA, but they need to realize that there are certain side effects that may occur with lasers. And what are the most common side effects and complications that may arise from improper laser use?
Well, it is unfortunate that any of these systems can result in not only expected side effects, but unexpected side effects and complications. And they're not just with the lasers. In fact, most of the complications that I see coming through my office are related to improper use of the intense pulsed light source, which in certain states is not regulated at all because it's not quite a laser, but it does have a lot of laser-like implications. And these IPL treatments are performed not in even in physicians' offices. They may be in spas. And the problem with those in particular is the fact that if you apply one of those to somebody who has tanned skin, and I'm not talking somebody even who has intrinsically dark skin phototype, but those people who have had recent sun exposure that may not read like they have a tan, but their melanocytes are activated. If they get intense pulse light treatment at the typical parameters that are employed for photo rejuvenation, they will end up with blistering, hyperpigmentation, and scarring. And therefore, I have seen a lot of people come into my office who have had IPL treatments in the past without any difficulty, and then all of a sudden they go in to their spa, have an IPL treatment, and end up with blistering and scarring, even though the same parameters were used. And it's because they may have eaten outside in July, and they didn't think of it as sunbathing, but they did have some sun damage. So IPL is a big one there. Another one where I see a lot of complications, and it's kind of in that same category because it's delivered many times in spas and not just in physician offices, is hair removal. And so we have the same problem where if somebody has had recent sun exposure, even if we apply the same energies that we normally would apply in those individuals in the winter time, if you apply those same energies after they've had some sunlight, they will end up with complications, as I've already mentioned. Certainly, even when physicians are delivering the treatment, there have been many complications that have come to my attention. Oftentimes, they are related to the fact that they are treating tan skin or they are applying improper fluences or energies to the situation at play, because they don't really tailor the laser treatment to the individual or the location that they're treating. So most dermatologists are well aware that the periocular skin and the anterior lateral neck, anterior chest skin are all very delicate areas, thinner and have fewer pilosebaceous glands. And so they would know to titrate the energy density. But there are several other specialties that have not had that type of training. We also see a lot of people who have used improper technique in terms of not just the energy, but the number of passes or the degree to which they're going over the area. They just apply too much energy too frequently, or they mix and match the wrong lasers, or there's improper wound care. There are any number of things that can go wrong. And even though I and others have tried to present a cookbook approach to laser treatments, some people really don't know how to tailor those recipes for individuals. It is unfortunate, but I think the more that people read about the systems, get their hands on, whether they're in courses with hands-on training or do preceptorships with others that have advanced skill in these areas, we're going to continue to see these types of things happening.
I see. So there is really no one cookbook approach or like all for one individualized approach that you can have there. But we have so many patients of different skin types, Fitzpatrick 1 through 6, that walk into our door. What considerations should be made for treating darker skin types?
Well, certainly people with darker skin types bring a different reality to the equation. I live in Washington. It's a multicultural affair there. And I see patients with very pale skin tones all the way to skin phototypes 5 and 6. Certainly when you're treating people with darker skin tones, you need to adjust the fluences for some of these systems a little lower so that you don't injure the melanocytes. But some of the systems are colorblind and you can use exactly the same fluences as you would in somebody with lighter skin tones. Again, there are many different recipes for different lasers and different skin types and different body locations, but the intrinsic skin phototype is one of the things that we take into consideration when we're choosing the laser as well as the energy and other laser parameters that are applied during the treatment.
Mm-hmm. And finally, Dr. Elster, what new and exciting developments can we expect to see in the near future?
Well, I think one of the exciting things that I see is related to the fractionated laser technologies. These fractionated lasers deliver energy at discrete areas in the skin separated by normal areas of skin. And these channels that are created by the fractionated devices are kind of, they're kept open for just long enough that maybe delivery of some topicals, whether they are hyaluronic acid to further enhance photorejuvenation, whether they're more therapeutic options like triamcinolone to improve scarring. These are things that are coming out that I think will be very interesting down the line in terms of improving the way in which we can deliver energy and therapeutics and reduce the number of sessions that could potentially be delivered.
Terrific. Well, thank you so much for being here today, Dr. Elster. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Dr. Yu.
Choosing the right laser for a patient's problem is probably more important than the operation of the laser. This choice of a laser is often contingent on the individual absorption characteristics of target chromophores, such as hemoglobin, melanin, or water. Vascular-specific lasers target intravascular hemoglobin, which has three primary peaks within the visible range of the electromagnetic spectrum, 418, 542, and 577 nanometers. The lasers that have been employed to treat congenital and acquired vascular lesions include the argon 488 to 514 nanometers, argon pump tunable dye 577 and 585 nanometer, potassium titanyl phosphate 532 nanometer, krypton 568 nanometer, copper vapor bromide 578 nanometer, pulse dye laser 585 to 595 nanometer, and ND YAG 532 and 1064 nanometer. Pigment-specific lasers often rely on the principle of selective photothermolysis, in that thermal necrosis remains confined to the melanosomes without damaging surrounding structures. High-energy quality switch lasers can successfully treat benign epidermal and dermal pigmented lesions in addition to tattoos. Superficially located pigment is best treated with shorter wavelength lasers, such as PDL of 532 QS ND-YAG, whereas longer wavelength lasers such as the Ruby, Alexandrite, and 1064 QS ND-YAG may penetrate greater tissue depths to remove unwanted cutaneous pigment. Newer picosecond lasers, which harbor a 100-fold shorter pulse duration than existing QS nanosecond lasers, have also shown promise in treating benign pigmented lesions and tattoos. Ablative lasers include the high-energy pulsed and scanned CO2 and erbium YAG lasers, which have traditionally been used to treat severely photodamaged skin, rhytides, dyschromia, and atrophic scars. However, postoperative morbidity and long recovery times often limit their usage. Recently, newer trends in ablative as well as non-ablative facial resurfacing have emerged that offer modest clinical improvements. Fractional thermolysis has emerged as a way for laser beams to create microscopic zones of tissue damage known as microscopic treatment zones or MTZs. The MTZs vary from device to device, where some create non-ablative dermal injury and others are associated with both epidermal and dermal injury. These fractional devices work to improve photo damage, skin texture, and scarring while offering patients less pain and downtime. Lasers have also been employed to improve scars, working on the surface texture, erythema, flexibility, and symptomatology. But laser treatment must be appropriately tailored to the proper classification of scar. Clinical differentiation can often be difficult, especially among hypertrophic and keloid scars. The 595 pulse dye laser is most often utilized in treating hypertrophic scars, keloids, erythematous scars, as well as stria, whereas atrophic scars are best treated with ablative CO2 and erbium YAG lasers. Nevertheless, treatment parameters may not only be influenced by the scar's color and texture, but also by the timing and prior treatment history. Moreover, it is important that physicians consider the Fitzpatrick phototype of an individual requesting laser treatment. Fitzpatrick phototype 6 may absorb as much as 40% more energy compared to phototype 1 or 2 when irradiated by a visible laser light, keeping fluence and exposure duration constant. An approach that ensures a margin of safety while producing desirable results is far more preferable than risking irreparable tissue destruction. New directions in laser therapy include the application of topical drug delivery through fractional-based laser systems and devices. This enables drug compounds for better percutaneous penetration and distribution to target cells, since compounds weighing more than 500 Daltons have inherently low permeability through the stratum corneum. Furthermore, laser treatment is also being combined with other new modalities, including cryolipolysis, radiofrequency, and intense focus ultrasound. Next month, we'll have exciting news for Dialogues in Dermatology as we are planning the release of an app for your smartphone so that you can access the Dialogues in Dermatology library on the go and anywhere you are. We will have a tech theme for our January edition, which will feature apps for derm, smartphone and cloud computing, as well as social media for the dermatologist. Speaking of which, we now have a presence on Facebook and would like you to join us online for previews, info, and fun. This has been Terry Cronin with Dialogues in Dermatology. Keep up all the great work you're doing on behalf of your patients. Your expertise and hard work is appreciated, and it makes your colleagues and your community proud. Stay passionate about dermatology and have another great month.